Well, thank you, everyone, for tuning into our program today. You may know that Family Talk is a listener-supported program, and we remain on the air by your generosity, literally. If you can help us financially, we would certainly appreciate it. God's blessings to you all.
This is George Barna, and you're listening to Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Welcome to Family Talk with your host, psychologist and best-selling author, Dr. James Dobson. I'm Jim Veldheis. Today, we're bringing you part two of a conversation that Dr. Dobson began yesterday with researcher and author George Barna. Let's listen to this interview right now on today's edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
George, that program that we did yesterday, I think, is one of the most important that we've done in a long time. And I really do hope that our listeners will access that. It's in our archives. You can get it on an app or write us and we will accommodate you. But one of the things we talked about is the meaninglessness of life to the majority of the American people. They don't know why they're here or what they should be doing. They don't know if they believe in God. Sort of they do, but he's a winking, blinking grandfather, you know, who you talk to when you're in trouble. But there's not a relationship there, and they certainly don't know who Jesus Christ is, and many of them bristle at his name. So there's all this confusion about what life means. Do you see a linkage between that and the willingness of American people to, at least the majority, to continue to support the killing of unborn babies?
Oh, very
if
much.
I don't have meaning and significance, does an eight-week-old baby?
Yeah, I mean, there's a very definitive link. And, you know, in terms of data, you can see that there's a link there. When we look, for instance, at our primary parenting generation in America today, which is now the millennials, and we look at their beliefs, we see that their beliefs about life are not linked to a clear set of beliefs related to morality. We know, for instance, that they're less likely than others to believe that all human life is sacred. They're less likely to believe that the Constitution of the United States says that life is important or has value. They're less likely than any generation we've had since we've had research to say that the value of life comes from God as opposed to them doing something that gives it real value or meaning. They're less likely to say that we should cut back funding to Planned Parenthood. They're less likely to say that marriage is important. They're more likely to support cohabitation, having children without marriage, teenagers having sexual intercourse, all of these things. There's a complete disengagement of any kind of biblical or Christian morality from the way that they're looking at what family is, their responsibility to children, to society, even to themselves. So yeah, I'm hugely worried about where this country is going because we've disengaged ourselves from the foundations that made the country great and enabled people to really know God, enjoy God, and live for him.
There's instability as a culture in those thoughts and ideas, isn't there? I mean, I once heard Francis Schaeffer speak in Washington, D.C. Boy, he said incredible things. And he was up speaking one time, and I was in the audience. I looked around. These young people were half asleep. And I thought, don't you hear what this man is saying? He gave an illustration I'll never forget. He said there are bridges all over Europe that were built by the Romans. They're still standing. And the reason they still stand is you don't drive trucks over them. You don't put them under a great deal of pressure because they would collapse in a lot of smoke. He said the American culture is like that. We have these bridges that we sort of support, but if you put that culture under a lot of pressure with a war, with an economic collapse, with an epidemic, with terrorism, you put it under a lot of pressure. You're driving trucks on, it'll come down because there's not the stability there with a belief system that holds you steady when things go wrong. Isn't that wonderful? That's what that man was saying that these kids slept through.
Well, and of course, Francis Schaeffer was formative for me in terms of understanding that there is such a thing as a worldview. I'd never heard anybody talk about that before.
He got to me, too.
Yeah.
He really did. I was coming into my own after graduate school. You know, you get beat up a lot there.
Yeah, for sure.
And this man made it clear in his series, How Shall We Then Live?
Yeah.
And others, but he was saying these wonderful things. Where is he today? He is desperately needed today.
Well, and let me build on that just a little bit, because one of the things that I've learned in the research, we're the only company in the country that does ongoing research about people's worldview. I mean, that blows my mind in the first place. This is such a fundamental...
There's no other Christian organization that does that?
No. So, you know, we've been doing this for, 30-something years now because of Francis Schaeffer, you know, opening my eyes to it. But one of the most important things that we've discovered is that in American society, everybody has a worldview, of course. You have to have it in order to get through your day.
Yes.
Because your worldview is basically that mental and emotional and spiritual filter that helps you make sense of the world around you. It helps you to interpret and respond to reality. But that worldview starts to develop somewhere between 15 months and 18 months of age and is almost fully formed by 13 years of age. So what that says to me as a parent is that I can't wait until my kids are in high school or college to have the big discussions of life with them, to have the serious talks about how life works. What they're watching from the crib at 18 months of age is starting to form in their mind a worldview. The music that they're exposed to when they're sitting in the car listening to the radio, that's forming their worldview. The movies that I bring them to watch, that's forming their worldview. The discussions that we have at the dinner table, if we even sit around and have a discussion, that's forming their... By the time they're 13, their moral foundations, their theological foundations, their relational foundations, their habits and priorities for life, they've already made the key decisions about what that's going to look like.
Do you remember an old phrase that you don't hear very often anymore? It was the Catholic Church saying, give us your kids till they're 7 and we will have them for life. That was a basic idea. You better get started early.
And do you know who says that now? Is Satan.
Yeah.
And so you look at our society and everything is geared to winning over the kids, because if you win the kids, the war's over. Who's going to fight you if you've already won them over? They're the forthcoming generations of leaders. And so you don't have to worry.
The 13 is an interesting year. That's the beginning of puberty. And it's the time when boys, and especially some boys, but the majority, if they're exposed to pornography, they will get hooked on it and it will hold them for a lifetime. When they're 50, they're still looking at that stuff. It destroys marriage. It destroys the sexual component of the relationship between a man and a woman. And it's responsible for so much divorce and all the things that come along with it. It breaks my heart. I've studied it for many years. Watch that year, 13, because so much is going on sexually, emotionally, physically, the changes that are going. That is a pivotal year. Another pivotal year is 5 years of age. I'm convinced that through the first 5 years, kids will believe everything you tell them. Santa Claus can go down every chimney in the world in one night. They will believe it if you tell them. And if you don't get across the message of who Jesus is and what he means to us, what he did for us, by five, you've lost a lot of ground that you may never make up. And that's why I wrote a book called Legacy. The most important thing a parent has to do, job one, is get your kids in the hands of Christ. And if you don't do that, you'll regret that when you're my age.
Well, let me throw something else on top of that, which is that when we look at the parenting generation today, people who are in the primary parenting years, 18 to 44, only 5% of those people have a biblical worldview. And you can't give what you don't have. So most parents in America, 24 out of 25, don't have a biblical worldview to give. So what I want to suggest is if you've got any grandparents that are listening, it may fall on our shoulders to be the ones
often
who are
does.
Bringing that spirituality into the mind and the heart and the attention of our grandchildren. So that's a critical thing too. You know, sometimes as grandparents we say, well, I don't want to step on my kids' toes as they're raising their kids. Break their foot in this case if you have to. I mean, you get in there. You absolutely have to make sure that those young children have that exposure to God's truth. Remember that most of their parents believe there's no such thing as absolute moral truth. And so without that as any kind of a foundation, it's going to have to come from someplace else.
You know, I'm a great fan of football, college and the NFL, although I've lost some of my enthusiasm as a result of recent events you would know about. But what I've observed is that these black kids who go on to be great football players, they're largely black. Just look at the demographic and you'll see it. They will say, hi, Mom. They never say, hi, Dad. They say, hi, Mom. And if you talk to them, and if they have a faith at all, they will usually say, my grandmother taught it to me. You know, that's where the repository of theology and faith still rests with the generation, the older generation. And they're, like you just said, they're doing a job of taking these kids who don't have fathers, and the mothers are working and trying to do what they can. Some of them are completely unable to handle that responsibility. And all of a sudden, grandparents have got these kids to raise. It's deja vu all over again because they raised one generation and they thought they had it done, and now they got to raise another one. Thank God they're doing it, many of them, in teaching their children what their faith is all about. Have you observed that?
Absolutely. And you know, one of the critical dimensions there is to remember that that works with grandparents because of the relationship. So as long as we can maintain that relationship, we have the ability to overcome the attraction to the media that our young kids are being fed. So that's such an important element. Probably the most important thing I would say that we as grandparents do is making sure that our grandchildren have exposure to God's truth.
Don't you wish you could talk to a nation of African-American men who don't understand what it's like to raise a family and protect a family and provide for a family, and they are desperately needed there. They are desperately needed in that family. If we could reestablish, reconnect the American family, both black, white, and every other race, we could make an incredible difference socially. But right now, more than 70% of black kids are born out of wedlock. Isn't that a terrible...
You're taking the statistics out of my mouth. I was just going to bring that up. That's great. Yeah. And you know, that fits, unfortunately, into the shift that's been taking place in our culture. David Barton and I had done some work together trying to trace the shift of values in American society from colonial America to today. And we wrote this book where we talked about that shift in values. We actually enumerated, as best we could tell, they didn't have survey research in the 1600s and 1700s, but there's a lot of documentation about what was taught in the family, in the schools, in the churches, in town meetings, the key things that were talked about, even the newspapers. And so it was the top 10 values that we identified were things like hard work, civic duty, humility.
Slow down. Yeah, we want to think about those. Start over, will you?
Yeah. Hard work, civic duty, humility, moderation, family, faith, the rule of law, frugality, and simplicity.
That's the ground floor. That's the foundation of the culture.
Absolutely.
If you've got that, everything else goes better.
Which is what values tell us. What's the nature, the heartbeat of a culture? So that was American culture when this nation started.
What are they now?
Now, I went back to our current research of the last 3 or 4 years. I would suggest that the top 10 are comfort, experiences, personal expression, happiness, independence, entitlement, control, acceptance, and freedom. One of the things I was looking for in doing this study is what's the overlap?
Man.
There's no overlap whatsoever. I mean, it's like we built parallel highways that eventually wind up going in completely different directions.
Well, what do we leave people with, George? I mean, this is pretty depressing stuff.
I think it'd be depressing if we didn't have a God who loves us and cares about us and has given us a blueprint for how to live appropriate lives. So I think, again, it comes back to trying to figure out what really matters. God tells us that, and that's what a biblical worldview is. These values that I just identified in America today, that's basically postmodernism, which says that it's really all about how I feel. It's not all about how I feel.
Yeah.
It's about my relationship with the one who created me. He created me for a purpose. He empowers me to do things that when I serve him, I feel his love, his presence, his passion, and that makes all the difference in the world. That makes me want to get out of bed in the morning.
Yeah.
Not this other stuff, you know, comfort, experience, expression, happiness. Happiness, really? So, you know, I'm searching for God's joy, not people's happiness. There's a real difference there. But you don't know that unless you spend time in his word, praying for his wisdom, his guidance, for his strength to be the person that he put me on the earth to be.
You're aware that Dr. Billy Graham died not too long ago, and Shirley and I had the privilege of being at his funeral. It was one of the most inspirational funerals, if you can call it that, that I've ever been to. And he was lauded not because he was admired by the world and all the other things, but by his message. And Franklin Graham was the last speaker, and he got up and he essentially preached one of his dad's sermons. And I tell you, that message has got to be heard, that we are sinners. We don't have a hope of reconciling ourselves with a holy God. And there is only one bridge between us, and it's Jesus Christ. And he offers this as a gift, as grace. You don't have to earn it. All you have to do is believe it and accept it and turn from your wicked ways. How I hope the Lord will continue to raise other godly men like Billy Graham who would do that.
You know, Doctor, for the last 40 years, I've been doing this research. And when I came into the whole research field, you know, I was a young cult full of, you know, energy and great ideas, and we were going to change the world. But, I mean, now that I've got a few years on me in doing this, the thing that impresses me about the research is that it's not all about, hey, we need the newest, the latest, the greatest, a more brilliant strategy. What we need is Jesus. What we need is to confess our sin and humble ourselves before Him. And if we allow Him to take control of our lives, the rest of this can take care of itself.
Oh, and parents, this is where my heart bleeds, is the parents who are missing the opportunity to teach these values and these ideas and this theology to their kids, and they're missing that opportunity. My son Ryan will tell you today that when he was in high school and he would be out late, it would be 11, 12 o'clock, and he would come in, that many times he walked past the open door of our bedroom and found us on our knees praying for him. You know, I mean, what a heritage to give your children. Mm-hmm. Let them know there's something significant going on here. This is the most important understanding that I can pass on to you. I hope to give you an opportunity to have a good start in life, but that's not anything compared to knowing who you are, my son, my daughter, and what you're here to do, and what God wants of you. And the wages of sin is death, but there is another way. There's a gift that will cleanse you from all iniquity. Man, that'll preach. You know what? I'm not a preacher, but I feel like one today.
Tell it. You know, for me, it goes back to Ecclesiastes. You know, I've always been impressed by bright people. And, of course, Solomon being the wisest person ever.
Yeah.
I love to read Ecclesiastes, and the basic message is, you know what? It's all meaningless except that you love God and keep His commands.
This is a guy who had absolutely everything.
He knew. Because he was able to try everything, experience everything, do everything, know everything. And he's the one who said, none of it matters. All that matters is that you love God and keep His commands. Good enough for me.
George, you're doing a great work. We've got slides all over the table here, and there's no way we can get to them all, and our time is almost gone. What last thing would you say to America on the basis of your data?
I think we're rolling over and playing dead. We're not fighting the good fight. We're not realizing the incredible heritage that we were given and how we've been squandering it. Shame on us. We can do better. We have to do better. And Christ gives us the way, and we're still in a society where, by God's grace alone, we have the freedom to pursue the things that matter.
George, let's leave our constituents who are listening to us with one thought. The most important thing you could say. Suppose you're talking to a mom and dad who've got three kids, and they're 3, 7, and 9, and there has to be a most important message you want to say to them, and say it with all the passion that I know is within you.
The most important thing that you'll ever do, perhaps the only important thing you'll ever do, is to make sure that they know Jesus Christ as their Lord and Savior. If you want to love your kids, that's the best way that you can love your kids, by giving them eternity, bringing them to the foot of the cross, helping them to understand that they are sinners, but that God has given them a way out, and it's through Jesus Christ. And it doesn't matter what jobs they get. It doesn't matter what schools they go to. I mean, that's all nice stuff, but that's worldly stuff. Hmm. When God looks at them, when they come to see Him in heaven, He's not going to say, did you get a Harvard degree? He's going to say, do you know my son Jesus? You bring him there, you've done your job.
That's it. That's job one. There's no more important subject we could talk about. You know, we hit a lot of topics in the course of a year. But it all comes down to eternity.
Absolutely.
And you have said it as well as anybody ever has. Thank you for what you're doing. And I love you, my brother.
Likewise. Thanks for letting me be here.
You've been listening to the conclusion of Dr. Dobson's interview with researcher and author George Barna on this edition of Family Talk. If today's show has impacted you, we'd love to hear about it. You can share with us by calling our listener feedback line at 844 1-800-823-2669. All feedback, comments, or testimonies are appreciated. Again, that number is 844-823-2669. Lastly, won't you consider donating to the Ministry of Family Talk? We're completely listener-supported and rely on God for your tax-deductible financial contributions. You can make your donation securely online when you go to drjamesdobson.org or over the phone when you call toll-free 877-732-6825. That number again is 877-732-6825. We appreciate your prayers and support. I'm Jim Valheis. Thanks for listening to today's show. And remember to listen tomorrow as we'll bring you a special Good Friday program right here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. Have a great day, everyone. Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.